Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And that is launched out to deep left field. Big fly for Mike Trout. This is ground ball to second base. Brent Hinkle falls down, picks it up, fires the first. The Angels have no hit. The Seattle Mariners. It's gone. Big fly for Anthony Rendon.
Hey guys, I'm Alex Curry.
This is Joe Adele here with the Los Angeles Angels. This is
Brendan Marsh.
This is Chris Rodriguez.
You're listening to the All Angels Podcast.
And welcome to another edition of the All Angels Podcast. Back at Halo Haven, I am Dan Garcia.
I'm the curator.
And like I said, we're back at Halo Haven after having a week off, but everything's back to normal for us now, so that's good news.
Yeah. Daniel had to take a little vacation to Hawaii. No big deal.
A little bit on location, but you know, we're back now and everything's back to normal. So let's get into this week's series. Obviously not the best series, but coming into it, a lot of momentum with the Dodgers, the Angels-Dodgers series, the Angels taking 2 out of 3 from, you know, still a very good team, the Dodgers, who's struggling. But like I said, a team that can break out of that slump at any point. So do you have any thoughts about that series, you know, seeing the Dodgers and the Angels?
Yeah, I mean, the Dodgers came to that series falling fast, right? Start off that really crazy hot start, went into Chicago, got rolled up there, lost like a, you know, doubleheader. And so they were reeling, and then they come in. So it was a good time to have the Dodgers, especially. And then I think the game that most impressed me was the Sunday game, where they held on to that very small lead after giving
that
up
huge,
gave up 14 the night before. And then they held on to that lead after Walsh hit, you know, went ahead, and just to come in and shore that up. And it, you know, I just felt the anxiety, like all the good stuff that, you know, just to be in a ball game in the ninth inning. So
against Bauer,
to watch Bauer, you know, to beat Bauer is kind of,
I think
rewarding.
Yeah,
but sure.
Say, you know, Bauer's on the mound, so you need something. And when they start scoring, or when they score that first run, the Dodgers, you're thinking like, is that going to be enough? You know? So that was a great, Angels were kind of on a high, fans were on a high, taking 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers, but
then you could walk into work, you know, with a little strut on Monday morning, knowing that all the, you know, the Dodger fans can't really say too much, you know?
So they get to Houston. Obviously, didn't end up the best series, but it kind of started off with kind of, in my opinion, a kind of a question mark with a bullpen game to start out. Alex Cobb went on the IL during that Dodger series with a blister issue. So you gave it to Junior Guerra to start the game. And I don't know why, but it seemed like they were reluctant to call him an opener, even though it pretty obvious that's what the idea was.
Yeah, you know, he was going one, maybe two.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, we were texting back and forth like, oh, great.
Yeah.
Almost like we conceded the game from the get go. And then I guess we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
We'll see someplace, but we actually, you know,
so for that game, when I saw that, the fact that it was going to like I mentioned, like a bullpen type of game, I had a huge question about what's going to happen. And if, you know, the Angels can compete in this game. And that's kind of what happened. You know, Junior Guerra again goes to inning plus. So he gets into the second inning, but doesn't get it out. He gives up 3 hits, 3 earned runs, 2 walks, and 2 strikeouts. And so at this point, at the end of 2, the Angels are down 3-0. And you're kind of thinking like, well, there goes that momentum. Cause now you're into the bullpen. Now you're into Suarez came in after Guerra, and a guy that hasn't started a game yet this year, not even in Salt Lake, because he was supposed to start, I believe, like on Saturday or something like that, and they scratched him for this reason. So he has no time with anything really baseball related.
And then just based on his track record from the last few years, it's been iffy at best.
Right. So
he's been shelled quite a bit. And then for him to come in, and I think he was almost the highlight of the game, other than probably Jared Walsh.
Right, exactly. And Jared Walsh has a
huge, I mean, obviously
has a huge game, and he all started off in the fourth with this.
Jared Walsh, the batter, he singled his last time up.
Next pitch, this is lifted high in the air into right center, and that's going to drop and hit the warning track. Mike Trout is going into third. He is going to be waved home. The throw is going to be late. Trout scores all the way from first base.
And like I said, double by Walsh, gets Trout home, cuts the lead to 3-1. And if you watch that replay of that, Trout is moving. He is still as fast as he was when he came up into the
Millville Meteor, baby.
Right, he's still just as fast as he was when he came up, you know, so many years ago now. It's kind of crazy how time flies with that. But Jared Walsh obviously wasn't done. You heard in the highlight, he already had a single to his name. He adds the double, and then he comes up again later in the game and pulls this out of his hat.
Next delivery, that one is hit well down the right field side. It's tight to the line, and that ball is out of here. Boy, Jared Walsh having a big night for the Angels. Single, double, and now homer. And he has driven in both Angel runs. That cuts the Astro lead to 4-2.
So the Angels were down 4-2 at that point. And when Justin Upton gets in the batter's box right after Walsh, he does this.
As a big leaguer.
Oh, Jay up, get out of here. Get going. Back to back. Start the train. Oh, now we got something to talk about here, boys.
Boy, Jay up going Uptown Funk back to back.
Because Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Because Uptown Funk don't give it to you.
Exactly like Gooby says, Uptown Funk for Justin Upton. Back-to-back home runs. Third time that's happened this season so far. Upton involved in all three.
Wow.
So they
good
said
stat.
Yeah, they said it during the broadcast, and I remembered it because it stood out to me. It's like, how often do you have back-to-back home runs, you know, that early in a season? Like I said, three that early in a season, and at least one guy is involved in all three.
Is he finishing it? Is he the second
come
around?
I didn't look at it to see if he's finishing it.
So I think that's where the pressure lies.
I think, and honestly, where he's been batting in the lineup, I wouldn't doubt it. Like, you know, he's always kind of seems behind Walsh or behind Trout or behind Ohtani. Like, he always seems to be back behind those guys. Makes sense. But you know, there's been some games too where I think Walsh has been behind him. So that's something I have to probably look up, and we can probably talk about next time. But yeah, he's been involved in all three back-to-back home runs so far in the season for the Angels. So like at this point, the Angels are only down 3-4, and this has been a whole new game. And Suarez, kind of like we mentioned before, came in and he kind of struggled a little bit that first inning he came in, but kind of settled down. He ended up going four innings, giving up five hits, one earned run, three walks, one strikeout. And again, the walks seem to be the issue right now with a lot of the Angels pitchers. So, but he was able to work out of some jams, which is good. And like I mentioned, Walsh and Upton start the sixth inning and they go back to back. So now it's 3-4. Phil Gosselin comes up. You know, newbie guy kind of coming.
I was kind of a little sketched out by Phil Gosselin. I was like, dude, where did this guy come from? He reminded me like of a poor man's Rob Quinlan.
A little bit, right? Yeah, right? I can see that.
And then I'm kind of liking this guy.
No, and he's actually done really well so far, filling in for Anthony Rendon, who is hopefully going to be back this weekend against Boston. But yeah, he's done a really good job. He came in to this game looking to tie the game, and this is exactly what happened.
Ground ball to shortstop in the hole. Correa picks it up. Had trouble with it. Rojas scores, and the Angels have tied it in the sixth.
So you hear Matty V. He ends up tying it in the sixth, 4-4 on an infield single. Hit hard. Correa bobbles it a little bit, gives it enough time to get down there, which is perfect. Not necessarily, you know, ball flying over the wall, but he's still producing runs. And I think when this team is at its best, I kind of mentioned with when they play in the Dodgers too, it wasn't necessarily home run after home run after home run. It was, you know, doubles and moving the guy over. And like, obviously there's two home runs in this game, but the key ones, you know, the tie and obviously end up taking the lead are all infield stuff. And so that just shows like when this team is playing kind of the small ball,
1985 ball,
there you go. There's Joe Maddon at his finest, 1985 right. Ball. Good vibes only. And it seems like that's when the team performs the best. Yeah. And Drew Butera, another guy,
dude, I was like,
that is in
I was
because
like,
of injury.
I was like, Drew Butera, was he just like on the team still?
Like four years ago or something like that. I forgot.
Did we just bring him up? Or
yeah, so again, another guy, because of the so much injuries with the Angels right now, you need to find guys. And you know, at times when these guys perform, it looks great. But you know, they are who they are, so you can't expect it every game. But look at the, you know, Drew ends up tying the game with this RBI bunt.
B. Butera, the catcher.
He shortens up, gets the bunt down. Here comes the go-ahead run! Perfect execution from Butera, and the Angels have their first lead of the night.
So, yeah, Drew Butera, bunt RBI to take the lead of this game, which ultimately would be the difference in this game. But he's actually done really good behind the plate.
Solid. And I think the only run we got last night was because of Butera. So,
yeah, so
veteran catcher.
37, so veteran, you can definitely say that. Yeah,
but just to like jump into a pitching staff and have that rapport and, you know, that communication, that's right. That's a tough thing.
Well, like, and he even said, or they even mentioned that his first game catching was with Griffin Canning at, I believe, in the Dodger series, and or maybe the series before that. And Drew literally met Griffin Canning like an hour before first pitch. It's like, hey, it's kind of like show up.
It's
hey,
like, what do you, yeah, what do you throw? What are the signs?
Yeah, what do you throw? Help me out. What do you throw? Oh, cool. I won't be surprised. But he's done a great job behind the plate managing this staff. I think he's 3-0, not 3-0 now, but I think he's 3-1 now with him behind the plate. But he's 37, so you can't expect him to be catching 3-4 games, you know, back to back to back. Like, it's still going to be a little bit of Kurt Suzuki, who has been not great, to put it bluntly. But, you know, they're going to have to rotate. It seems kind of more regularly because they are both up in age.
Yeah, I'm just glad that sacrifice squeeze, or I don't even know if I would call that a suicide squeeze, but I'm just glad the Angels are pulling stuff like that off. That's like one of the most exciting plays in baseball.
Especially too, when he's, because I don't think it's a suicide either, because he's not breaking for home
plate. He's not running like he's stealing home,
right?
So,
but he's still, but Drew like still seems like he's showing it a little bit early, so you can like, oh, I know what they're doing.
They still couldn't handle it,
though, right? So. Exactly. So they ended up taking the lead 5-4. That would be the difference in the game. The Angels win 5-4 after a 4-run, 6-inning. In this part of the game, kind of, I think summer hurts the Angels the rest of the week, and that is you had Watson, Meyer, and Iglesias all come in. Watson comes in for the second day in a row, just off the IL, pitches the inning in 2/3. You had Myers come in for an inning, third day in a row, and then Iglesias also comes in for an inning, also third day in a row. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of going back to what we were talking about with the Dodgers. That Saturday game was great, and they came back. But they had to use so many arms to do that. Then obviously Sunday, with a chance to win a game, you're going to use those guys again, especially your top guys. And they win it, so that's great. And then this game, the same thing. They have a chance to win the game. They use your top guys. But now it kind of sets you back going forward. I think that definitely played out in the next game. So those guys, you know, do their job, hold the seventh, or, you know, for Watson, the sixth, part of the sixth, seventh and eighth in, or ninth inning. Yeah, seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. And they get the win. And now you're on like a 2-game mini winning streak. And for the Angels, any winning streak's a good winning streak. So, obviously, you go into Tuesday now. Ohtani on the mound, Ohtani at bat. You know, and we've seen a couple of Ohtani's outings here in Halo Haven. Together, and we kind of always said the same thing, is like, it's that first inning, is that first couple innings, it's his walks, can he control his stuff? His stuff is so good that it just seems to move all over the place, and sometimes it moves out of the zone. So they put up a little stat box in the game, and it said his first inning ERA is at 9, and then his second and on was at 0.93. So it just showed, like, if he can handle not walking guys and get quick outs, especially in that first inning, he should be able to hit cruise control. And that's exactly what happened in this game. First inning, I believe, was 1-2-3, no walks. He looked great. He looked the best Ohtani I think we've seen, honestly, since he, you know, came to the Angels. And he put on an absolute performance. He goes 7 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, the only run off of a Kyle Tucker home run, the fifth. And Kyle Tucker seemed to be the only guy that Yeah, he seems like
an angel killer.
He's the only guy that seems to be doing damage against the Angels, like you mentioned recently. But again, one walk, which for Ohtani,
oh, dude,
it's huge. You get one walk and 10 strikeouts. that's a, like I mentioned before, I think that best outing by.
Yeah, he doesn't take, he doesn't get a win. Still right. Best outing for sure.
Oh, definitely. And two.
And the length. I think the length, getting him into what he went seven.
Seven innings. But this is the thing. Plus. Comes down the eighth inning. You know your bullpen is already taxed. Like I mentioned, your top three guys are come out. We knew about Myers and we knew about Iglesias unavailable. 3 days in a row, you're not going to pitch those guys 4 days in a row. You're just not. Watson, on the other hand, 2 days, but coming off the IL, an inning plus a day before. So that was a big question mark. Knowing that, Ohtani going seven innings, only at 88 pitches, what would you have done? Would you left him out there to at least start the eighth inning and see what happens? Because if he gets something that was going on during the game was Houston was swinging really early in Ohtani's counts. So there was a lot of first pitch outs by Ohtani.
Well, yeah, I don't even know what the stat is, but once Ohtani has two strikes, basically
you're done. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing was
a Duelkin, right?
Yeah.
Finish him. Right. Like Mortal Kombat, right?
Yeah.
Like you're done. And that's probably why they're just trying to get ahead, because they know once they dig that hole, it's over. Yeah,
so you already know they're
I don't know there. If I put them out there because, I don't know, they're trying to be kid gloves with them still, just coming back from that injury and getting him into seven. I think the seventh inning, I think that was just like a goal within itself. So
I think if it was any other outing and you had maybe not all your guys available, but say you have like Iglesias available at least, or Myers, one of them available, I think – that's fine, but I think you need him to at least start the eighth. He doesn't necessarily need to finish, but if he goes out in the eighth and throws one pitch right away and they go up hacking and he pops a guy up or he rolls over, right now you have an out in the eighth inning and you kind of already set the tempo. But if that guy reaches because of a walk or a base hit, then yeah, okay, now you can do what they did, which was put him in right field because he was due up the next inning and hope no one hits the ball to him. But as a fan, I would have loved to see him at least start the eighth inning. And then if that first guy gets on, whether it be a walk or a strikeout, or even necessarily if it's like one of those at-bats where it's like a 7-8 pitch at-bat, then yeah, then you could probably pull him. But I think because the Astros were going so hard on that first pitch, you at least need to put him out there to see if they continue to do that and get themselves out really quick, which is exactly what ended up happening. But what you know ends up happening, you know, throughout the game. But they take him out, like I mentioned, put him in right field. You know, Angels did offensively struggle, but McCullers was on it. McCullers Jr. goes 8 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 9 Ks, and he was at 96 pitches when he came out. So it's like if it was anyone else and it wasn't that kind of a pitcher's duel, you know, the Angels could probably very easily have won this game. But you know, Grandin McCullers, he rose to the moment, and it's like it was an honest to God pitching duel that I haven't seen in a really long time, where these guys were getting outs left and right, not a lot of base runners, not a lot of hits, not a lot of walks,
especially where they're playing too. Minute Maid to have a pitching duel,
anything in the area, you get like scared. That. Yeah,
I mean, I feel like I can poke one to left field if just I really enough, got right? into it, just like you know, if I had enough little speed off that.
So, like I mentioned, so Ohtani goes to right in the eighth, they bring in Slagers. Slagers only goes 1/3 of an inning, 1 hit, 2 earned runs, and a walk. So there you're already kind of put yourself behind. They end up bringing Calatayud after that. I believe he goes a third of an inning. Third of an inning. He gives up 2 hits, gives up 2 runs, and off one of them off a home run. So there you go. Now you're even for this pitching duel that was, you know, going really quick and you're in the game. Now you're down really, really, really quick. And then they bring in former, he's an Angel now, but wasn't for a little while. Noe Ramirez to kind of clean it up. And he absolutely just, you know, goes an inning and a third, gives up 1 hit, 1 walk. They get 4 runs in the eighth over 3 pitchers too. And that's what's the frustrating part for me was like, if you just put Ohtani, maybe he gets one of those outs and then you take him out and then you can change. Everything can change. So Angels end up losing 5-1 against Houston again in an outing by Ohtani that was, I mean, unbelievable. The best outing he's had.
Yeah, just sucks all to spoil career. Something, you know, that great. But
and the what sucks too is Trout continues to struggle at Minute Maid. if you remember the last series he was in, when they were in Houston, when he got hit by the ball, the reason, because he was mic'd up, the reason that he got confused or got hit by the ball was that he admitted it. He said on mic, "I can never track the ball well here. You can never see the ball well." He thought it was going to be a slider, so he's already kind of dipping out to go after it. Ends up being a fastball, gets him on the elbow. So, you know, the struggles for him at Minute Maid are legit. For whatever reason, you know, he just struggles, and it showed in this series. You know, I think he went hitless on Tuesday. I think he maybe got one hit on Monday. Doesn't play Wednesday. So, again, his Minute Maid series wasn't great. A key hit and some key situations in this game would have went a long way. But, you know, how do you feel about Trout's struggles at Minute Maid? Or just, you know,
it's kind of crazy out of all the parks this guy struggles with, because I feel like if he just barely pops something up, it's going to go out. Right. I wonder if it has anything to do with like the center field backdrop.
That's the only
thing. With like Taos Hill being removed.
That's one thing I can think of.
Putting up that, like, you know, the H and the star and all that stuff. I don't know if that's part of it.
I don't know, because it's like, even, I mean, it's not like
it's his kryptonite.
Maybe. I don't know. So that's like, I'm thinking if at any point,
any place this guy's going to crush the ball out of, it's
going to be, I mean, you can. Yeah. And that's what sucks too. It's like, if they end up playing them at any point in the playoffs, whether it be this year, next year or whatever, you just hope that the Angels have home field advantage at that point, because, you know, it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah. It is apparent for sure.
And it's kind of crazy too, because he admitted it too. He even said, again, mic'd up the last series before this with Houston, "I can't track the ball. I can't see the ball here that well." And it's just kind of crazy. You think, you know, he's been known to take a lot of BP in the cage work below the stadium, especially at Angel Stadium. I wonder if he's, and again, I mean, I'm not there. I haven't gone to Houston at all. I wonder if he's taking BP in the cage at Houston, or if he still kind of sits in his routine as far as getting, you know, at bats in the cage underneath. But it's like, if you're not doing it on the field because you're having that trouble seeing the ball, it's like,
you need to be on the field, man.
Yeah. So, like I mentioned, a really crappy game, because you had that huge outing by Ohtani, the great outing by Ohtani, and it just kind of, I don't know, for fans, I think it just kind of set the mood going into the final game of the series on Wednesday, where you had no Trout, you had no Fletcher, and you had no Upton, all quote unquote scheduled days off.
What is this, like NBA load management?
Well, what I find super interesting about that is that you had Ohtani pitch the night before 80 something pitches, like I mentioned, 88 pitches. Don't trust him to go in the eighth inning, but he's still batting the next day. It's like, if any one of those
should
three,
have the day off,
it should be Ohtani.
Of course.
So it's like, I don't know if there's, and again, we don't know, but like Upton, I can understand. He came off the IL not too long ago with a knee issue. So that kind of made sense. But for Fletcher and Trout, I'm just thinking, like,
dude, if I'm Madden, I'm like, if you're over 35, day off.
Yeah, exactly.
Under 30, you
get
playing.
Up. Yeah, get on.
You
there.
Young.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the one thing I didn't understand. It's like, if Ohtani can pitch and pitch the way he did, he's not getting the day off. You know, why is, you know, if you want to give Upton the day off, great. If you want to give Fletcher the day off, great. But like, okay, keep Trout in the lineup, because there was absolutely no threat in that lineup. I mean, Walsh has been doing great, but I don't think he is a cleanup guy. Like, he's like, he fits great in that fifth, sixth spot. You know, same thing with Ward. Ward homered in this series, which was his first hit, or he got his first home run in the last series. He got another home run this series, but it's not, I mean, that still isn't the threat that an Ohtani, Trout, Upton, you know, 2-3-4.
Yeah, I feel like they basically conceded the game. They
Which is frustrating right off the bat.
You know, it's like, as a fan, you're like, okay.
Yeah, cool. So that sucked. You had Andrew Heaney on the mound, and so maybe you're hoping for him to repeat the outing he had last time, where he was really good. But he ended up going 5 1/3 inning, 9 hits, 5 runs, 5 strikeouts. He has 5 on it for the Tyler Skaggs Foundation. No walks. So I guess
I got 5 on
there
it.
There you go. And 5 no walks, which is good, but gives up 3 home runs. And like you mentioned with Houston, it's like, you get that ball elevated, man, and it's just they have a thing now, and they've been doing it more and more during the broadcast, where if it's a home run that kind of looks kind of, you know, suspect or not very far, they'll be like, oh, they'll have it. They'll pull it out like the next time around. That would have only been a home run in like 3 out of the 30 ballparks or something like that. And I feel like Crawford boxes and all that stuff has a lot. The home runs, it probably wouldn't be home runs other places.
Yeah, it reminds me of locally there's like a little league field called Shamel Park, and like when you hit a ball, like, you know, like in high school, they're like, oh, that's out at Shamel.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh, cool.
But we're not there.
But yeah, we're not there. Yeah, cool.
So like I mentioned, obviously Andrew Heaney had struggles. Very first pitch of the game, gives up a home run to Altuve. So in a way, you know, I guess it foreshadowed what was going to happen, but he ends up giving a home run to Altuve on the very first pitch, then another two-run home run to Gratterall, who has been an absolute, another angel killer this last series. And that all happened in the first inning. So before you can blink, they're down 3-0 with a lineup, like I mentioned before, with no Trout, no Fletcher, no Upton, and no Rendon because he's on the IL.
And no Pujols.
And no Pujols. We'll get to that later. But so no real threat, and you just kind of felt this game was out of hand and it was going to happen, and that's exactly what happened. Kyle Tucker, home run in the sixth inning, two-run shot. Patrick Sandoval, a guy that a lot of people have been looking forward to, like, seeing in the rotation. And to this point, he has looked really good. This was a kind of his rough outing, if you will. He goes only two innings, gives up four runs off of two home runs. So, you know, not great by him. Maybe he still ends up working his way into the rotation at some point, but a tough day for him and tough day for Angels pitchers overall. Losing the game 9-1, losing the series to Houston, 2-1. So you had that momentum coming in against the Dodgers. You look good that Monday game. You look like everything was working. You pitched right when you needed it. You got hits when you needed it. And then the rest of the series was not great. It's something like we were talking about earlier. I kind of looked it up about giving all these guys days off. Like I mentioned, Trout, Fletcher, Upton, Rendon, because he's hurt, but not Ohtani the day after he pitches. And that was a big thing coming into this year, was like, we're not going to rest him the day before, and we're not going to rest him the day after if he's feeling good. So I looked up to it. I looked into it. Ohtani, day after he starts, just this season, kind of a mixed bag, or kind of like feast or famine. He's only batting 200 the day after he hits or pitches, but he has 3 hits, 2 of them are home runs and 3 RBIs. So it's kind of like, it's either he's going to go yard or he's not going to do anything at all, because there's a couple offers in there too. So I don't know if that's something they look at down the line, as far as maybe we do give him that day off, especially if he goes 7 innings, 88 pitches, and he's, you know, extended pretty far.
I think it's like, do we have a better option there?
Yeah, I mean, I think
there's probably not a better option.
But see, in this situation, if he does sit the day after the game or after he pitches, you can very easily then slide in Trout or slide in Upton at that DH. So it's not a full day off. It's a partial day off, because now they're at least off their feet. They're only batting. They're not on the field. And what really kind of surprised me too with the quote-unquote day off for those guys is, A, we're recording this Thursday night. They didn't play today, so they already had a day off coming. And B, it wasn't a day game after a night game. All these games this series were all at, 5 o'clock Texas time, or 5 o'clock here, 7 o'clock Texas time. So it wasn't a quick turnaround, which obviously kind of gave it a question mark a little bit, you know?
Yeah. And it's funny, because I do remember when Cal Ripken went 2,135 straight games of not having a day off. But anyways,
that's never
going to be broken.
That's never going to be broken. So yeah. Like I mentioned,
anyways,
it sucks to lose to the guys like that. It sucks that you had all this momentum and it seems to be gone now going into the Boston series. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, before that, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with the Curator's Chronicles. You work hard and you play hard. So treat yourself and stock up for summer barbecues with Kansas City Steak Company. Visit KansasCitySteak.com and get 10% off your order and free shipping with code SD at checkout. From classic steak cuts
to USDA Prime to American-style Kobe, hard-to-find specialty cuts, and more. Kansas City Steaks has everything you need to fire up the grill. They make it super easy. Each order from Kansas City Steaks is flash frozen and delivered directly to your home. Satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Imagine relaxing in the backyard with family while enjoying steakhouse quality meals from Kansas City Steaks. Try their butter tender filet mignon, Kansas City strip, juicy steak burgers, all beef jumbo hot dogs, and even a complete meal combos. Bring the steakhouse to your home this summer with Kansas City Steaks. Go to KansasCitySteaks.com and get 10% off your order and free shipping with code SD. That's KansasCitySteaks.com. Promo code SD. Again, that's KansasCitySteaks.com. Promo code SD. Sports, culture, takes. Takeline has it all. Takeline is a weekly podcast hosted by Emmy Award winner Jason Compression and former WNBA champ Renee Montgomery. That's a fast-paced exploration of the NBA and the world of sports and culture. Each week, Jason and Renee talk about the games, players, conversations, and issues that run both on and off the court. Follow now to hear Takeline every Tuesday wherever you get your podcast.
Let's go!
It is a beautiful day for a ball game. This is the Curator with another edition of the Curator's Chronicles. Today we bring you a swap meet find. One of my favorite things to do is to go to the swap meet.
Obviously.
Obviously, right?
If you follow us on Instagram, you know exactly about that.
Yeah. So anything we post, like if I do a little story of something, a lot of times I actually leave that out in the wild. So if you're following
if
us
you're nearby,
and you're in the greater Inland Empire area, you can go snag that. I'm giving you a little bit lead, like a little pro tip for you. But this is something I found probably like 7 years ago in my swap meeting. And I rescued this from the oily pavement over in Rubidoux. And I was pretty proud of this, being that this guy was one of my favorite players growing up. And this thing's pretty worn, pretty chipped up. But this Brian Downing bat, if you're watching online, you can see it. I'm moving it to the camera. Brian Downing swung a heavy Worth bat known as a Tennessee Thumper. Brian Downing started off as a catcher with the Angels, ended up being a power hitter back in the 80s. Which you weren't seeing all that. He got all juiced.
Bad word choice.
I didn't mean juiced. I mean, he lifted a lot of weights.
He yoked.
This guy got yoked up. And one of the classic things, going back to our Johnny used to collect Halo magazines, and there's a classic Halo magazine with Brian Downing in a phone booth looking like Superman with the Superman under the Angels jersey. So he was
big.
Like big, right. He was hitting bombs. But I found this is actually a game used bat by Brian Downing, and obviously some kid used it probably in the backyard. Yeah. But I got this thing for $5, and Brian Downing again is one of my favorite players. I actually jumped on the Angels team bus when they were leaving back in the day, the good old days, and Brian Downing was there. You weren't getting shot. You weren't going to get tased. But the good old days, how baseball should be. But Brian Downing is dear to my heart. He doesn't come around the stadium too much, doesn't sign too much. But this is another thing that we house in the garage. Something that anything game used is something that I'm looking for. And to find that out in the wild on the oily pavement was pretty rewarding. So that is another edition of the Curator's Chronicles. Thank you for tuning in, and stay tuned for more finds probably this weekend.
There you go. Halo_Haven on Instagram.
Let's go. Batter up. We're taking the afternoon off. It's a beautiful day for a ball game. For a ball game too.
So like I mentioned before, the Boston Red Sox are the Angels' next opponent. Angels are already in Boston for a 3-game series Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So to preview the Boston series. I talked to Boesky, another guy from the Sunday League, the podcast, Boston fan. So like I mentioned, you're going to see in the video, I said that I'm like perfect guy to have on. We talked about everything Boston and what has made them so good so far this year. And here you go. Another member of the Sunday League, the podcast. He's a Red Sox fan. And with the Red Sox coming into town this weekend, he is a perfect guy to have on. Boesky, how are you doing today?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Hey, pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we had your buddy on DH a couple weeks ago. He's a Mariners fan. We have you on, the Red Sox fan. I was going to try to get Rube on, but I was in Hawaii on vacation, and the wife was already kind of looking at me weird about, hey, you're doing a podcast, right? I'm like, I probably can't get an interview in. So I'm like, oh, I'll wait till August. Like, I'll get him in, but it's like, you know, bad timing. But like I mentioned, Red Sox are in town, or Angels are going to be in Boston for a three-game set. First thing I want to ask you is, how does it feel to have the number one team in baseball right now?
Honestly, I'm kind of – I'm spoiled, man. I'm spoiled. I've been since 2004, I mean, I think I fell in love with the Red Sox back in like 97, 98, 99. Nomar's my favorite player, you know, of all time. I felt like I was like very, I could relate to him so much, just like how, you know, style of play, positions, you know, jersey number, all that stuff. But, you know, growing up, you like the typical players, you know, Griffey. And then, you know, I came across Manny Ramirez. And when he went to Boston, it's kind of, it's like when I really just like, I know I fell for Boston. And, but like I said, you know, I'm spoiled. Since 2004, we broke the curse of the Bambino. In 2007, we won again, 13, and then recently in 18.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so. Well, at least as the Angel fans, we can at least say we have one more than the Mariners. And, you know, like we can at least say we're even with the Dodgers as long as I've been following baseball, and that's kind of all that matters. So there's that.
For sure.
Yeah, Boston, like you said, off to a great start. Number one team power ranking-wise by MLB.com this week. What, in your opinion, has been working for you guys?
The hitting, man. We can outslug just about anybody. They're currently on a bit of like a mini slump, like a whole team slump, with the A's coming into town right before you guys. You know, it's a little frustrating. Like, we started this game earlier today. The Red Sox had bases loaded with nobody out, and they only were able to get one run out of it on a walk. Right. You know, yeah. So, really, it's their hitting is top notch, and their starting pitching is doing surprisingly well. How can I put it? The starting pitching, I saw a stat on one of the broadcasts that the starting pitching is probably like second or third in the league in innings pitched.
Oh, wow.
You know, and that's something that we didn't have last year. Like, I really feel like we probably tanked 2020, you know, season that didn't count, of course.
Right. Exactly.
But I mean, you know, starting pitching is holding up. I'd say our middle relief is still you know, getting ironed out. Yeah, I mean, like the tail end of our bullpen it's solid, man. So like I think once it really, really gets going and everything just clicks again, like we did in the beginning of the season, like we got swept by Baltimore to open up our opening series.
Yeah.
And then we went just on a run, nine straight. And just kind of have kept the pace since then.
And it's funny too, because you kind of mentioned it, the series before the Angels come to town, you're playing the Oakland A's, and the Oakland A's, same thing, kind of had that start like Boston, where they got swept by the Astros and the games weren't even close. I think they were outscored like 22-3 in that three game set. And same thing with you guys. You guys obviously got swept by Baltimore at the beginning of the season, and you guys turned it around. A big part of that looks like offensively, like you mentioned, just hitting the ball all over the place is JD Martinez. He's been the offensive leader in that clubhouse.
With Xander Bogaerts, and also he's not as consistent, but Rafael Devers. I mean, these guys they bat 3-4-5, and you got Verdugo right in front of them. Like, they're consistent, man. Like, who do you pitch to?
Right.
You know, that's what it comes down to. And you know, like you mentioned, JD. I think he's second in the first or second. He's tied with Ohtani, right? For
They're first in the AL, but second in baseball. Because as we record this, I believe Acuna hit a home run last night, and he has 11.
Yeah, and then you have, I mean, JD and Devers. They're both sitting at the top of the league in RBIs. Yeah. You know, you're knocking in runs. Devers right behind them in home runs and doubles. Like, it's crazy, man. You have Xander Bogaerts. He leads the league in hits. JD right behind him.
Right.
You know, yeah, so
you look at your top four guys batting average wise, and some people like to use batting average, and I kind of understand, you know, the premise of why not everyone likes it, but you look at your top four guys, they're all batting above 275 batting average wise, you know, and obviously Bogart's 336 and then Martinez 333. They're able to put the ball in play. Was this kind of expected? I guess it's nice now that it's happening, but was this kind of expected, this kind of production from these guys coming into the season?
Oh yeah, definitely. They've been doing this since 2018 when JD came to Boston. He signed his 5-year deal or whatever it is, and I mean Bogaerts has always been consistent. He's always been a tough out. I mean every now and then, just like anybody else, they have their crappy at bats, you know. But
right.
But I mean Devers is hot and cold, you know. But when he's hot, and dude's unstoppable. He puts up those fantasy numbers.
And then, too, I mean, you guys lost Mookie, you know, a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Was the loss of Mookie, you know, obviously his offensive play is something that's hard to replace. But seeing these guys kind of develop, whether it be Bogaerts, JD was kind of already established then. But, like, seeing these younger guys, these other guys come up, was that, you think, a reason why they were okay with leaving or letting Mookie go pretty much for, you know, not a whole lot?
In my opinion, they did get back some solid pieces, you know, with Verdugo. They got Jeter Downs as well, and another guy by the name of I always call him Colton Wong, but he's a catcher. He's like in their double A system, but his last name's Wong. So I feel like they got back some solid pieces, and I feel like their clubhouse chemistry just clicks with these guys a lot better. And now that we signed also Enrique Hernandez, you know, he came over from LA, you know, just it's all about that clubhouse chemistry. And I feel once Mookie was traded, which I'm still a little salty about, of course, like you don't trade a generational player like that, you know. And but it at first it was kind of like, man, like this sucks, you know. But in the end, I feel it was for, you know, for the future,
right?
Definitely for the future. It was a business decision. But although I feel like they could have afforded to sign him and give him the money he was asking for, as far as Mookie's concerned.
So you talk about clubhouse chemistry, and that's really interesting too, because obviously with Alex Cora back in the clubhouse being the manager, obviously last year because of the whole Astros, and he was kind of at the tail end of it as far as who got caught up in it. But do you think that's the main reason why these guys are performing the way they are, is just familiarity with Cora? Because obviously, like I said before, he was there before he got sent away for a year, so he's back.
Yeah.
So there's a familiarity with that. And just, you know, obviously around baseball, you always hear about how good of a guy he is as far as relating to his players. Is that, do you think, is a big reason why, A, the chemistry is the way it is, and B, they're performing the way they are?
Definitely, Alex Cora has a lot to do with it. And, you know, you mentioned that he was suspended for that 1 year with his involvement with the Astros. And, I mean, he had a whole year to watch these guys from outside of the box. You know, it's a different perspective, like on field and off field. And he was watching them on TV. And I'm sure he learned so much. Like, I can't speak for him, of course, but he learned so much about you know, the players that he was managing previously, and then him getting hired back on, which I didn't think he was actually going to get. I was certain it was going to go to somebody else, but you know, nonetheless, you know, he knows how to manage his players, and just he has so many team players on this team. Like, there isn't one guy that's just like, oh, it's all about me. And I mean, I feel like he manages his bullpen well, for the most part, at least. You know, any manager they get a lot of crap for how they manage their bullpen, of course. They also say that he pulls his starters out a little too early, but, you know, like I mentioned earlier, they're you know, one of the top in the league in innings pitched by starters. You know, so Alex, you know, to get back to your question, Alex Cora definitely has plenty to do with all of this. And, you know, he's learned a lot. In 2019, he kind of had like his sophomore slump, you could say, as a manager, after they won the you know, their 2018 World Series. You know, so he went through his sophomore slump as a manager, and then all this stuff happened, you know, with Houston in the past and all that. But yeah, in the end, I feel like, you know, Alex Cora is definitely a big role that I don't feel anybody else could have filled.
One name that is absent from the roster due to injury, and you know, is a name that a lot of people recognize as Chris Sale. Yes. Obviously missed all of last year with an injury. What is the latest that you've heard or read? Is he going to be back this year? Is he not going to be back this year? Is he, you know, is there a timetable in which he would be back?
Late June, early July. He's already throwing off a mound. It's not at 100%, of course, but he's starting to get familiar with the mound again. They're saying that it's about late June, early July. And I'd say around that time is when the Red Sox will have their identity in the league established. Cause I feel like right now they're just kind of back and forth. Although they are at the top of the league. They're slumping right now. And the next, the next 2 months is when they're really going to get tested as far as who they're playing. So if we're still in contention by then, I feel like it's going to be the perfect time for Chris Sale to come back.
How comfortable are you with him on the mound due to like his injury history? Like, are you like, it's more as a fan, like, you know, as Angel fans, you get guys that are on the mound and you're always kind of wincing every time he pitches because it always seems like he's one pitch away from being hurt or, yeah. You know what I mean? Something like that. Is that kind of where you're at with Chris Sale right now? It's like when he's on, great, but you're always worried in the back of your mind that this could be a pitch that, you know, he stops and grabs something or starts like, you know, moving his shoulder a certain way. Is that how it is with him?
Yeah. Definitely. Just his pitching mechanics. I feel like his elbows is going to explode. I don't know how he does again. Yeah. And, that's why, you know, he ended up getting Tommy John, and I feel like they've really taken their time with him for his rehab. And, I'm confident that he's going to come back strong. And once he gets comfortable back on the mound and, look out, going to be another, he's going to reclaim his league as league leader in strikeouts in the league.
Who in your pitching rotation rotation or bullpen has surprised you, who's done well this year? You know, a guy out of the bullpen, so maybe a starter that has really surprised you so far.
Nick Pivetta, we traded for him. Last year we traded away Brandon Workman and Heath Embry or something like that. We traded them away, and both of those players are no longer with the Phillies. And to my understanding, the Rays were trying to trade for Nick Pivetta, but with Chaim Bloom being the GM that came over from the Rays, like, you know, he kind of had already the inside scoop. So, he's probably one of my favorite guys right now. I mean, not to pull up his stats real quick, but, he's throwing really, really solid right now. He's sitting at
3.19 ERA, 5-0. Yeah, 35 pitches, 1.25 WHIP. A 28-year-old. Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, that's good too because I never heard the guy before. But I mean, I said, you know, I kind of watch Boston when they are either in Anaheim or Anaheim goes there. But I mean, to get these guys that are off the radar, I think is a big factor in a lot of teams when they are doing well, because you expect, you know, you have Eovaldi and you expect him to perform, you know, a certain way. But when you get guys that aren't expected to perform that way and they do, obviously it helps the team tremendously. What about Eovaldi? How's he been looking this year? How's he been, I'm guessing the team's number one starter?
He started off pretty hot, you know, and he throws hard. He grunts just about on every pitch, so he's kind of a psychopath out there. But he's another guy that he's been his elbows just, you know, it's exploded on him several times. Where was I going with it? In the end, you know, Eovaldi, his stuff is there, but I feel like he might be pressing a little too much, so it's kind of messing with his control. And but when he's on, he's on. I mean, you've seen him in 2018 in what was a game 3 of the World Series, due through six innings of relief in an 18-inning marathon, you know. And I feel like that start was what got his contract. It earned him his contract, you know. But, Eovaldi right now, I feel he might be our number 4, honestly, as far as how they're all doing.
Wow, that's something when he can be your 4. A guy that Angel fans will know and they remember and they really liked when he was in Anaheim. He's pitching tomorrow, so the Angels will not see him this weekend. Is Garrett Richards. How's he been this year for you guys?
He's another guy that his stuff is nasty. His spin rate and all that stuff that they measure. I don't get too caught up in all that, but just from what I catch on the broadcast, his spin rate on his fastball, his curveball, like it's up there. It's one of the top ones. And he struggled early on big time, but they talked about some pitching mechanics that they changed up. Like he's kind of just pitching from the stretch now. In a way, he doesn't go through a windup, and because he's a little taller, his arms and legs are all over the place. So it kind of, I would imagine, it throws off his balance. So I feel like they just got his mechanics to be more compact. And since then, he's been a lot better. It's been a lot better. And it's funny because I remember still the game that he was pitching for Anaheim in Boston maybe 2015 or so. Yeah, and he blew out his knee on covering the bag at first. Yeah.
That was actually, because to that point, because I think it was a little bit later in the year, if I remember correctly, mid to late summer, he was actually like in the lead for like Cy Young that year. He was having a great year.
Yeah.
And that happened, and then the rest is kind of history. Came back from that, and then Tommy John, and then he went to San Diego, and then now he's with you guys, so... But definitely always been a fan favorite with Angel fans since, you know, obviously you see a guy grow up and develop and get some serious playing time with the team. You kind of grow attached to him a little bit. But so going into this weekend, Angels and Red Sox, Griffin Canning's getting the start for the Angels on Friday. Any ideas? Because Boston has yet to officially announce any of the starters for this weekend. But any ideas in the back of your head who might be getting that start on Friday?
Nick Pivetta was supposed to get that start. Okay. Just based off of the rotation that I kind of just went back and looked at it.
Right.
It was supposed to be Nick Pivetta, but he got placed on the COVID list.
Oh, okay. So yeah, that's kind of tricky because they can come back at any point pretty much. But I mean, today seems kind of fast for it, even with that.
I agree. But they did call up Eduardo Bazzardo. I don't have too much on him, but he's a lefty. Okay. He's a lefty. They call him up from the training side or maybe from AAA. I'm not sure. But so he's going Friday. Saturday is going to be Martin Perez, and Sunday, okay, Nate Eovaldi.
So what do you know about Perez? How's he been? Because he's going against Bundy, the Angels, opening day starter, but has had troubles as of late. So it's not necessarily a guaranteed kind of schedule. Yeah. But how's Perez been doing so far this season?
He's a grinder, man. He's a grinder. He always wants to go more than five, but I feel like they just keep pulling him at the wrong time. And it kind of bites the socks, bites him in the ass a little bit. But he's a grinder. He's a little bit of a soft tosser. He can touch 95 every now and again. He's like one of those hard-nosed lefties, like an old school hard-nosed lefty. But he stays cool, calm, and collected. And, he's a two-seamer. I want to say he throws a cutter.
Okay.
Yeah, he's been pretty solid for the most part, especially last season in the 2020, where I feel like the Sox were just not interested in playing at all. Yeah, he was probably him and Verdugo were like the only two that wanted to be there. Like.
And then Sunday, a getaway game, early game here on the West Coast, 10 o'clock a.m. start. Jose Quintana, a better outing his last time out. Was able to go pretty deep into the game. Any idea who's going to start Sunday for Boston?
Eovaldi.
Eovaldi's going to be that guy.
Yeah, it seems like Eovaldi's the one that's lined up for that. And because I was looking for it too earlier, and nothing's posted. So as of right now, it looks like it's going to be Eovaldi. And you'll see how hard-nosed he is. Everything he throws, it probably stays between 98 and 100 all game, fastballs-wise. And but he has a cutter, got a curveball, the split. Go ahead.
If you had to pick one of the, or like you had to pick one of the three games to be a pitching duel, 2-1, 2-0, something like that, out of the three, which pitcher do you think is most likely to have that kind of an outing?
It would have been Pivetta.
Yeah,
definitely Pivetta. I feel like Eovaldi, he walks too many guys, and Perez is very hittable. He's very hittable. If he makes a mistake, they're going to hit it.
They're going to hit it. And yeah, then on the flip side, too. So who do you think it's going to be if it starts snowballing, it can get out of hand pretty quick?
As far as
the three starters from this weekend,
Oh, definitely Perez.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be Perez. I mean, I mean, any given day, like, you know, these guys are major league hitters, you know, but my best guess, I'm probably going with Perez just because, you know, he's so hittable, you know, if he's not on.
Yeah. I mean, I think for us, probably the guy that would be kind of the shutdown would always be Bundy, because he has done it before. He's done it a number of times against high level opponents. And then I think the guy that could give up the most, obviously, is Jose Quintana, having one good quality start out of the year. So you're kind of hoping he's able to build off it. But if he kind of resorts to starts past, he can get ugly quick in Boston on Sunday. So,
oh, definitely. I mean, and you know, like I said, like, they're slumping right now for the last 2-3 games. I mean, we slumped against Baltimore. We've slumped against Detroit for a little bit. Like, it's crazy, man. But like I said, dude. But like I said, you know, these guys could bust out at any given time. They'll put a 15 spot on you real quick.
Yeah, and that's going to be interesting too, because the Angels hopefully gain back Anthony Rendon at some point. He said he wants to be back this weekend. Didn't say exactly what day, but if Anthony Rendon is in the lineup, you already add Trout, Otani, Upton, those two guys, Upton and Trout, on 2 days rest. Same thing with Fletcher. Rendon coming back. So, yeah, I think it has an opportunity for both teams to kind of, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw like one of those Dodger games when they played the Dodgers last week when it was 11 to 14.
Slug. Yeah. I love me some slugfest, man. Like sometimes, you know, pitcher's duel, it can be a little boring, but again, like, that's the beauty of it. Like, it's a pitcher's duel. Like, it just depends on how you perceive the game, and, you know, perspective is everything. Yeah. Perspective is everything is what I always tell these guys, you know? So,
yeah, you're absolutely right too, because it's like, it depends. If it's a weekday game and I gotta go to work the next day, I want a pitching duel. I want it to be done by 10 o'clock.
Yeah, let's get it over with.
If it's a weekend and it's a slugfest and it goes 4+ hours, I'm like, all right, cool, I can do that. That's not a big deal. But yeah, I think for me it depends on the day of the week, because I'm not trying. There's one time where was it 19 where the Angels were in like a 14 or 15 game inning game, and it's like it was on a Tuesday or Wednesday, and I'm up at 11:30, just like, I don't want to go to sleep because I'm afraid as soon as I go to sleep my phone's gonna ding with an update, like a walk-off or something, like I don't want to miss it, and then
right,
you know, and all that stuff is going through your head, so like, I gotta stay through it. So definitely,
yeah. How do you feel with the extra inning games with the runner on second and all that? Like, it could be like either or, right?
Yeah, I like the idea of it. I've been seeing it in the minor league season or game for so long, so I kind of understand it more. I have a better understanding of it than Tony La Russa does, I feel. So that's one thing for me. But then also, I wish it happened like in the 12th. Give the guys an opportunity to like win it straight up. And then if it gets to that 12th inning or 11th inning or whatever, then implement it. I wish they just would give the teams opportunities to win it the normal way. Kind of like in hockey, you have one period of a normal, or they used to have like a period of a normal hockey. And then if that period doesn't work out, like, okay, now we're going to shootouts, or now we're changing it up. Like, I wish they would give them at least 2 innings, try to win it. And if not, we're doing this rule, because that extra inning game that I was talking about earlier, I remember the Angels going through the whole bullpen and even like the next day started because the arms were gone. And that actually hurt the Angels for the next like week, trying to catch up and try and send guys down, bring guys up. The guys brought up aren't, you know, MLB ready necessarily. So the cost of games there, like, I understand that fact of we got to save some of these pitchers' arms. So I like that idea. I just wish they would do it like in the 11th inning or something like that. Give them an opportunity first and then make it kind of weird.
Yeah. There was a game, the Red Sox against the Tigers, where it was like the first game of the series. I don't remember who was throwing, but the Red Sox put like a 5 spot on him early on, and he only got like 1 out. So they took him out in the first inning with 1 out. I want to say the next day they went extras again, like 13 innings maybe. And that dude ended up pitching like at the end of that game.
Yeah,
so exactly. It's the same thing. Yeah, bullpens, man. Like, you got to conserve the bullpens one way or the other.
Yeah, because like, especially if you win that game, you're still, you know, you're still screwed the next week. If you lose that game, you're still screwed the next week. So it's like, at what point is that one win might cost you 4 in the next week kind of deal? So it's So I like it, but at a certain point, not necessarily right off the bat.
Yeah. I actually had a question for you about Jared Walsh. Jared Walsh, isn't he? He's a two-way player, or he was supposed to be.
Used to be. So, okay. Jared Walsh, friend of the podcast.
when we last talked to him at the end of 2020, when he had that kind of a breakout month, AL Rookie of the Month for the month of for last month of the season, I asked him, like, you know, are you planning to go pitch? What happened was he injured his shoulder at spring training, and you know, he was never going to be the Ohtani pitcher. Like, everyone's like, oh, he's a two-way guy. He's never going to be the Ohtani guy. He was going to be a guy that they can bring out of the bullpen. And how they use him was they brought him out of the bullpen when, you know, it was out of hand, or maybe it was like a three-run game and not out of hand yet, but wasn't necessarily a key situation. He was never a high leverage guy. So when he kind of tweaked his arm a little bit in 2020, he just kind of said, okay, I'm going to take the year off pretty much from pitching and just focus offensively. And now he's kind of just totally taken off, and there's no plans for him to go back to pitch. I mean, he's going to be your everyday first baseman now. So there's absolutely no reason for him to kind of go back and experiment with that when there's no need really right now.
Yeah. Now with him moving over to first, I mean, obviously, you know, Pujols is out just like that.
Yeah.
Do you, I mean, do you feel like it was mutual, or it was like Pujols' decision? Like, he asked for it for a release, maybe?
I mean, all the reports that are coming out is that Albert wanted to play, and the Angels kind of stood up to him and said, well, that's great, but we have Ohtani DHing, who is probably, you know, in the lead for MVP between what he's doing on the mound and doing at the plate. And then we have this young kid, Jared Walsh, that is, you know, higher on base percentage, higher home runs, higher, I mean, higher, you know, defensive coverage, like whatever stat you want to use, he's better than Albert at this point. Obviously, you can't compare careers, but at this point, he's better in everything you can think of, and we need to get him on, you know, his at bats. There's no place for him. And if Albert wants to say, well, I can play somewhere else, and he's going to, I don't know if he necessarily demanded, but from the reports, he got upset and he wanted to be play somewhere, and they called him out his bluff. I think honestly, he probably said, fine, then release me, thinking that he had leverage because of his contract. And I think honestly, the Angels called his bluff and said, okay, fine. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And I've said before, like, I'm about 80% sure we won't see him again. I just don't see a fit from where
he can
be a first baseman or even a DH. So if you're talking about DH, he's not playing in the NL. AL, I don't know where you can, where there's a, you know, so many people love these guys that can play multiple positions. Like, even JD, for you guys, in a pinch, you can put him out in the outfield. Obviously, not great defensively, but, you know, if someone needs a day off, you can put him in the outfield and give someone a day off, and he can still produce that in that bat. And it's like, you can't really do that with Albert right now. He can't play for, you know, very well. You know, it's like, And it just, you can see it too, when some of the scoops and some of the digs he needed to make, he just didn't make.
So yeah.
I think it needed to happen. It sucks that it was Albert and how it happened, but if you just take the name away from it, it was a move that was far overdue.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. You know, growing up, Pujols, he's one of my favorites of all time. You know, I always felt like he should have never left St. Louis.
Oh, same thing with me. Yeah. I think he should have been a legacy play. Like, you think of like Kershaw, will probably be, we'll see what happens next year, but you know, Kirby Puckett, Tony Gwynn,
Biggio, Jeter,
Cal Ripken, Jeter, Mariano, like these guys that are synonymous with one team. And I think Albert will still obviously be synonymous with one team, but when you look up his 500th home run, his 600th home run, his 661 home run, that's all going to be in Angels uniforms. And it's kind of weird that way, but I, you know, I'll always think of him as a Cardinal, even more so than an Angel.
Yeah. That kind of leads me into one of my questions that I had for you. What is one of your favorite Albert Pujols moments, maybe of his entire career and maybe his time on the Angels?
So one of my favorite moments is something that kind of didn't happen. So like when he was at 600, we was at 599. They were at home for the weekend. And me and my wife we got to see this. So we bought tickets for the Thursday, Friday, Sunday game because of, we had like a family, like baby shower or something like that, something family related on Saturday. So we couldn't go. So we go Thursday, nothing. We go Friday, nothing. And obviously we're at the baby shower. I think it was, my phone goes off and she looks at me. I'm like, yep, it happened. So literally bought tickets for the whole weekend.
Yeah.
Except for the one game and it happened. So that was kind of funny, but I guess on the field, and you guys actually talked about it a little bit, and DH knows all about this, of the Fernando Rodney save.
That
wasn't necessarily a save. He was in for like a four out save, gets out of a pressure situation in the eighth and does his little arrow thing. And I was actually at this game too. So it was even better
Yeah.
because I remember it. And then I think they had like a, a two-run lead because it wasn't a walk-off when it happened, but Pujols ended up hitting Trout home to tie it. And then that's when Pujols did the little arrow at Trout, and Trout did a little arrow. You know, Albert's at second, and Trout's at home just scored. And so they're doing it to each other. So obviously Rodney's going to see it because it's really going right over the right over the mound. So that moment was awesome. And then I think, you know, a batter later, or two batters later, they end up walking it off or something like that.
Yeah. And it's funny that it came from those two guys, from Trout and Pujols, because they're they're pretty low key. They're not,
since, you know, like even since then kind of deal. So yeah, exactly. I think, and the funny part is I didn't see it live because I was so, I saw Albert do it. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And because I was so focused on him. Not till I got home and actually watched the highlights. I'm like, oh, damn, he was doing it back to Trout. Trout did it. I was like, that was even better. But yeah, probably that major thing. And then obviously you see is that's kind of cool because I was, like I said, it was there in person. But, you know, the 500, he hit 499 and 500 in the same day or same game up at Nationals Park, and then 600 at Angel Stadium. And just, you know, all those little passing this guy and this, you know, record or that standing. Now he's the fifth in this or the fourth in that. That was pretty cool as it kind of marched up. But single event, I think it would probably had to be the Rodney thing, and a lot of people remember that.
Yeah, that was fun. I remember seeing it, I was like, yes, good for them. That's dope. Yeah.
and the Angel fans hated Rodney. I know he was with the Angels for a little bit, and I think it had to do with his time there because he's never he never met his like what people wanted him to be, and I think Angel's hands kind of held it against him. So ever since then, he would get booed like crazy whenever he was on the Mariners for a while. Every time the way the bullpen, you know, being at Angel Stadium, you've seen the bullpens, they're with the stands, so you can just sit there and they see Rodney warming up, and you can just hear a bunch of stuff. They just did not like it. So when that happened, that place went crazy on that Sunday.
We sat one time. The Sox were in town, of course. And we sat right next to the home bullpen. Mm-hmm. It was in the middle of the summer, dude, on a Sunday, like 1 o'clock game. It was brutal, man.
Oh, I learned that real quick with my wife when we first started dating. And we're like, oh, let's go to games. And she was like, oh, yeah, I'm down to go games. So we're going to a bunch of games. And the first Sunday game, we're like, oh, these tickets are up close and they're cheap. We're like, hell yeah, let's jump on it. Get those tickets. Yep. Yeah, same thing. Sunday, we're roasting. And I'm like, all right. This is why they were so cheap, because they were like right in the middle of the sun. It was probably like July or late June. So
yeah, they usually the Sox are usually in town in the middle of July, roughly.
Yeah, I think it varies. Let me see. I could probably pull it up and see
when I think they are. But this year is going to be August. If I'm not wrong. Let me see. Is it June?
July. Oops, hold on. My phone's actually
July 5th. July 5th, 6th, 7th.
Yes, so right after the 4th of July weekend. But yeah, ever since then, we mapped out, okay, what gets shade and at what point does it get shade? So now if we ever go to a Sunday game, we know for these, you know, five or six sections, because we know we're going to be good for the whole game. So that's kind of our Sunday, the Fit In With Your Sunday League, the podcast, our Sunday baseball kind of experience for sure. So like I said, I talked to DH. He kind of talked about it, Sunday League, the podcast, but you also have your own podcast. You're kind of also reaching out on your own little voyage. Talk about Soxy time.
It's Soxy time. Well, it's really just a Red Sox podcast. Some crappy takes and just giving misinformed information, I suppose. I mean, I'm really trying to do right now is just get better at the whole podcasting thing, like doing the solo thing, because it's hard. Tough, man. Like, talking to yourself is it's insanely hard. And growing up, like, I wasn't much of a talker. Like, I had mentioned to you, like, I'm a little shy and stuff like that.
If you listen to the podcast, you would never think that.
Oh no! That's two different people. Who I am right now, and that guy on there is two different people. like right here, like I'm just Ralph right now, but on the podcast, that guy's a psychopath, dude. I flip that switch sometimes, man. But Soxy time, like it's just kind of like a solo project that I wanted to try out, and it's going okay. It's going okay. Just the hardest part is being consistent and life. Life in general is just it sometimes it gets in the way. Other times it's like I'm too tired or something like that, you know.
Well, I guess the good thing for you is that they're East Coast, so you know the majority of their games
are going to be early. Over by like, you know, 7:30, maybe 8 if it goes like really long. Where
yeah,
here it's like we mentioned before, damn, it's like 11 o'clock and they're just barely in the bottom of the ninth now kind of deal.
Yeah, it's frustrating. As a matter of fact, on the logo, I intentionally put the clock, because it's like a clock with a baseball right, in it, like mm-hmm. integrated into it. I intentionally have the clock for 4 o'clock because like that's when it's sock time for me.
So you mean it's not 7:05?
No, it's 6:16 right now.
So inside joke. But, so definitely check inside out some joke. Of the podcast and get that. Exactly. But no, Oski, I thank you so much for jumping on. Really appreciate the view of the Boston Red Sox. Again, Angels start a 3-game series in Boston on Friday. Early games, obviously, all week because they are on the West Coast. So check the times and all that stuff. But thank you very much. And I really appreciate what you do here, jumping on. And then obviously everything you do with Plenty of the Podcast. Again, great podcast, funny podcast.
Thank you. Thank you.
Definitely check it out.
Yeah, go check that out. Check out all our stuff. You find all the links in our descriptions and all that stuff. But there was two more questions that I want to ask
you before
we hop off. Let me see. I had it written down right here. This one's just a real quick MVP, Trout or Ohtani?
Right now, Ohtani, because he's doing it at both ends right now.
Okay.
Which is crazy to think.
Oh, yeah. And that leads me into my second question. Do you think – how can I word this? Was Shohei Ohtani strike out Shohei Ohtani or vice versa? Hit a home run.
Oh,
how do you think those at bats would go? Ohtani versus Ohtani.
I mean, he just barely gave up his first hit last night off his cutter, and it was like a dribbler down the third base line that was just so slow, no one can get to it in time, and that's the first base hit off his cutter. Like, but he doesn't necessarily have a great changeup, and it seems like his changeup or he struggles. Batting wise, change up the way. So I don't. Oh man. And he's man. Lefty hitter, righty. So you don't have the lefty lefty thing either. So
if I had to take a bet, he's got that nasty split.
Nasty split. If I had to take a bet, though, I think if we go 10 times, I think Ohtani batter is probably getting at least 2 hits. I don't think he goes yard, but I think there's an extra base hit somewhere in there. But okay. I don't think it's completely shut down one way or the other. I'd say out of 10, he probably gets 2 hits. I would say like a single and a double. And that single, he'll probably end up stealing the base off of pitching Shohei, because Shohei doesn't have a quick move to home yet. So there you go. I'll say that.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, there you go, man. That's all I got for you.
No. And again, check out, again, like I said, Boski on Sunday League, the podcast with Rube and DH. The trio does a great job. So thanks again. And we will be right back after. It's that time of the year again, and all eyes are now going to be on pro basketball and the start of the Major League Baseball season. BetOnline.ag has your betting action covered. In the NBA, the conference races are heating up as the teams prepare to make their push for the playoffs. And if baseball is your first love, like it is mine, BetOnline has you covered. If you love hockey, golf, MMA, and championship boxing, guess what? BetOnline has it all. Every sport, every game, every matchup. BetOnline has you covered for all the odds and real-time updates, and this is the place for all your sports betting needs. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to place and check in on all your favorite sports bets all the time. Head to the website or use your mobile device and bring home the game with BetOnline. And we are back. Again, thank you, Boski, for talking. You know, Red Sox with this series coming up, and we'll see how it plays out this weekend. But now going to talk to Chris. This is the first time you've been on the podcast since the whole Albert Pujols being DFA'd. I already kind of said my 2 cents about it. How do you feel, and what were your thoughts when you saw that news kind of come across?
All right, 10 years ago, I was in San Francisco for a wedding. I watched the press conference from when Albert was originally signed. One of the greatest days of my life. Fast forward 10 years later, we know he did not live up to any expectations that we had. We talked about the splits in St. Louis versus Anaheim. They're like so
wide. Opposite end, yeah.
Yeah, we're talking like a .330 average versus like a .260, .240, something like that. Do I feel sad for Albert? I don't.
Because you saw a lot of people on there like, oh, how can you do it to a Hall of Famer? How can you do it to Albert? Like, do you think it was like in poor taste, I guess?
It was, I was shocked.
Okay.
I was actually teaching in class, and I started getting my phone blown up, and I think Daniel had a text. Somebody else had a text. You see what's going on with Albert? I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to stop. I got to go. I got to look it up. It was shocking, but I feel if Albert at the beginning of the year would have said, this is my last year,
exactly,
then they would have had to honor the process.
Yep.
Like, and if they, you know, did what they did, it would have been,
Ten times worse.
And knowing like kind of the backstory, what kind of blew up the night before with him not being in the lineup and him criticizing Joe Maddon, saying he's like a terrible
manager,
no idea what he's doing. And he wanted to play every day.
Yeah.
And so if you want to play every day, he's not going to play every day on the Angels. He knew that from the beginning of the year. He hasn't played every day for a long time. So if he wants to play every day, he basically was asking for his release because that was not going to happen. And I would love to go to a job where they owed me like $30 million and they just cut me and they said, here's your $30 million. Wow.
Yeah.
So, and we always say like, what a great, you know, guy Albert is off the field. And I really do appreciate that. I applaud that. I tip my hat to that. But we can't count that in what he's producing on the field.
Right.
That doesn't show up on the back of a baseball card.
No, it doesn't. I mean, and then too, like he does. He does great stuff with his charity and his wife's charity. Like they do great stuff. But it's like, it's funny though too, because fan wise, so people that aren't connected to that charity or, you know, maybe doesn't affect or isn't affected by that charity directly. You talk to some people and it's like, oh, Albert's the hardest. He doesn't sign for fans. He's the hardest guy to get because he doesn't sign for fans. So it's like, yeah, he does all this stuff for the charity, which is great. But it's like when it comes to like the common fan with the common, you know, hey, picture, hey, ball, he's not that great.
And have you seen his rates for like getting signings that are, you know, prearranged? Like they're insane. We're talking like $800 for a baseball.
Which I understand. It's like he's all Hall of Famer.
But, you know, top 10.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. I just feel like, but he hasn't been cool with like the common fan. It seems like for a long time.
He
like,
did sideswipe a baseball for Courtney and I.
Yeah.
With the Sharpie.
At spring
not
training.
Not the best, but.
2018?
Hey, I'll take it.
We still have that in the trophy case at home. But Albert today has officially cleared waivers, officially is a free agent. And how it works now, Angels still owe him the money, obviously. He can sign for the league minimum or the prorated league minimum at this point, whatever it is for the season, and that will be deducted from what the Angels owe him, but that's such a small amount.
Yeah.
That's still going to be
he's carrying $30 million.
He's still going to get like $29.8 million this season or whatever it is. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in the next, you know, days, weeks, you know, maybe even months. I don't know. But I put it out on Instagram. I want to know what you think. And I've said it before. I'm about 80% sure that we've seen the last of Albert. What do you think? Is he going to play?
He signs.
You think he signs? Do you have a idea as far as where he was signed or maybe like a certain
St. Louis?
You think St. Louis?
Yeah.
But they have Goldschmidt.
No, he signs just to write it out.
Do you think so? Because if his whole deal was, I want to play, he's not going to play there.
Well, then he's playing in the Royals.
Maybe the Royals. Well, I guess the Royals. They're, I don't know.
Yeah. If not that, he is going to not sign, and he's going to play for the Olympics. He's gonna play
interesting to see.
The DR Olympic team and just kind of go out with his home country and represent the country. And all that. So
like I mentioned,
I think those are the options for sure. So
yeah, I don't think he signs. And I put it up on our Instagram at Halo_Haven. No, because if you like you said, if he would have said that at the beginning of this year, it would have happened, but it just like, oh, I don't know. It's like, okay, dude, you're not, and it's like one of those athletes that isn't gonna get a farewell. It's Ken Griffey Jr., it's Vladimir Guerrero, it's Willie Mays, like these guys that go to these like secondary teams that, oh, that's right, he did play for them at the end of his career. No. Like people don't even remember, like,
yeah.
I Willie think Mays
that whole
is a
farewell
man.
Tour thing was like a new, it's a new easy. Phenomenon.
Yeah.
And like, oh, he felt so disrespected, but it is a business, right. Number one. Mm-hmm. He got his money.
Oh, yeah.
If you and I got fired from our job tomorrow, we're not getting anything.
We're getting the paycheck that we've already paid. We're not getting
anything. We're not getting anything. We're getting a boot in the ass.
Right.
And I don't know how we could cry for him. For that, he didn't produce.
Right, yeah.
He got fired, basically.
And it's like, people are like, well, he's a Hall of Famer. I'm like, he was a Hall of Famer for St. Louis. He wasn't a Hall of Famer for, like, yeah. I honestly think if he would have retired probably at the time where he left St. Louis, there would have been a good chance he still makes the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously the 500th and the 600th home run happened as an Angels player. But it's like, I don't know. It's just like, okay, cool. But he didn't produce Hall of Fame numbers for the Angels at any point. And St. Louis was like, bye. So I'm like, well, St. Louis should have re-signed him. I mean, he's a legacy guy. He's a guy that's, you know, should be going down as a St. Louis Cardinal from draft to retirement, but that didn't happen. So, you know, that's interesting. And so on our Instagram, I put out there, do you think Albert plays again? And 54% said yes, 46% says no. So even then, our followers are pretty split on, you know, does Albert play again or not? But either way you look at it, Hall of Famer, regardless, I kind of felt regardless of what the Angels, what he did with the Angels, unless they went on some crazy streak winning World Series, he was always going to go in as a Cardinal in the Hall of Fame. So, sure. I mean, that doesn't change anything.
I know he's like talks about entertaining like the no logo cap. And
no, he needs
to go in the Cardinal. Now?
He needs to go in the Cardinal.
Yeah, he got disrespected and he's going to go in as Cardinal for sure.
You know, do you think he's unanimous?
Oh yeah, 100%.
So was it Mariano's the only unanimous?
No, nah, he's unanimous.
So, you know, we'll see how that goes. But, you know, Albert's out there. We'll see if he gets signed or picked up.
No, I wish the best for Albert for sure.
Right. And I mean, he's, what is he, like 41, 42, which really means he's like 44, 45.
Oh, he's 50.
He's 50.
Dominican years, he's 50. We all know that. Then we saw Walsh come right back out.
Yeah.
And show
why
we released him. So,
yeah. So, I mean, I think the Angels are in good hands as far as the DH slash first base position with Ohtani.
Once right field shifted from Walsh having to go back to first, that's when that, you know, separation needed to happen for sure.
And like you mentioned, like he felt disrespected because he didn't start against a guy that he had previous success for. But again, that's like years past. Do you think he still should have had that cachet, if you will, like call his shot? Like, I want to start against this guy regardless of what your plans are. Do you think he deserved that at that point in his career, you know, his numbers being what they were?
Yeah, I would say so.
You think so?
For sure.
I don't know. I just feel like, well, maybe that means, you know, Artie's kind of stepping
in. I think Albert, in his mind, he thinks he's fast.
he thinks he's fast.
He thinks he's like 22 year old Albert. He wants to play third base. And like we saw him trying to tag up on that ball like a few days earlier before he was released. And I'm like, does that have anything to do with him being released? But like in his mind, he really thinks he's fast.
You think
he
can be Trout like in a 90-yard dash?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think he does.
So. He's like, I won't be Ohtani, but I definitely can get Trout on that.
Sure.
So again, Albert, free agent. We'll see how it goes. You know, maybe he's done, maybe he's not. But if he is done, what is it? 5 years until you can get inducted into the Hall of Fame. So 2026. Write it down. He's gonna be in there, definitely first ballot Hall of Famer. So before we go, we're almost done. And if you're still listening, thank you. We're about, I think this is probably the longest podcast.
The lights went off.
I know.
I don't know what happened.
Chris is going to have to like pay the electricity bill. Solar, I don't know. But good thing we still have Wi-Fi. So that is what really counts. Recap. Minor league season has started. It's about a week and a half in. Some highlights of what has happened so far. And we'll start with like the IE. Obviously, we are based in Riverside. So the IE is really close and looking forward to getting out to some more games once they come back for their second homestand of the season. But Jeremiah Jackson, one of the big names out there, Struggling a little bit right now. He has one home run, six RBIs, two stolen bases, but his on-base plus slugging is under 500, so not a great start to the season. But again, these guys are young. The season's young. We'll see how it goes. A guy that has really been impressing me so far at Illinois Empire is Kyrene Paris, the second-round draft pick in 2019. He is batting 296, four RBIs, 19 years old, and gets this. Again, they've been like, this is like their second week of the games, already has eight stolen bases.
Dang.
So he is definitely a threat on the base pads. And so that's really good to see that A, he's getting on, and B, that when he gets on, even if it's a single, it's, you know, it's for the most part turning into a double really quickly. So that's awesome to see. In the Tri-City Dust Devils, the new high A affiliate of the Angels up in the Washington area, Jordan Adams is kind of like the key guy or the main guy there. So far, he's only had 10 at-bats. So, again, not a big sample size for a lot of these guys. Batting 300 with a home run, four RBIs, on-base plus slugging is over 1,000. So,
wow.
So, you know, again, early numbers, but definitely a guy where if the Angels are contending and for a playoff spot and they're looking to make additions at the trade deadline, if this guy is, you know, producing and showing a lot of promise, he could be a guy that can get you a really good arm coming to trade deadline to kind of, again, depending on what the Angels do and where they're going to be at the time. Rocket City Trash Pandas, AA affiliate, brand new AA affiliate, had to delay their opening year, a whole year, which kind of sucks. Like, you feel like they're rushing to get the stadium done. Yeah, they're like all ready to
go. Cool logo.
Yeah.
I think you have a hat. Cop in the hat.
Yeah. And then 2020, no season. So they start the season, new AA affiliate out in Alabama. Reed Detmers is the big guy there, obviously. The first round draft pick last year out of Louisville, a pitcher that a lot of Angel fans are hoping that can, you know, join Chris Rodriguez in that rotation maybe next year. Some people were even saying this year, which I don't think is going to happen, but next year is a whole different story. We'll see how it goes. But he's only pitched in two games. So again, small sample size. ERA is above 7 right now, but he's only pitched in 6 1/3 innings. So again, really small sample size, 11 strikeouts. His most recent start, though, it was pretty good. Went 4 2/3 innings with only 2 earned runs, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts. And I think some reports are coming out that he was touching like 96, 97.
Wow.
So again, early sample size. I'm sure we'll visit back as the season goes, but a guy that the Angels and Angel fans have a lot of hope for coming into this next year and hopefully years to come. And a quick shout out to Orlando Martinez, also on the Rocket City Trash Pandas, another outfielder, that a real athletic outfielder. On May 7th, went 4 for 6, 3 home runs.
Wow.
A double.
Goodness.
6 RBIs. So, you know, it just seems like the Angels are stacked with, you know, obviously you have Brandon Marsh, Joe Adell, but there's some guys underneath them too that might not get the same kind of pub as those guys, but are still able to.
Well, I mean, going back to Jared Walsh, he was never like put out there as like a big prospect,
right?
At all.
And then something clicked, and you just never know.
He was sneaky.
Yeah, he snuck up on a lot of people. Yeah. So maybe this Orlando's maybe one of those guys.
That's Orthy, right?
What's that?
Is that Orthy?
Orthy.
Oh, isn't there like a prospect named Orthy?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. Look. I thought it was
nickname. No, Orlando Martinez. So. Okay. Maybe. I don't know. I'll ask him. But anyways, and then you have the Salt Lake Bees, obviously the AAA affiliate. Austin Warren, we talked to on the podcast before, reliever. 2 games, 0 ERA, 4 innings pitched, but 7 strikeouts. So, I mean, 4 innings pitched to 7 strikeouts, that's a really good ratio. No runs, a couple hits. You know, maybe a guy that we see later in the year if the issues with the bullpen kind of continue and they need to kind of cycle through guys, and we'll see how that goes. But he's had a really good start of the year. And also, obviously, Joe Adell with 26 at-bats, 3 home runs, 7 RBIs, 1 stolen base, on-base plus slugging at .964. So nice. This is, again, coming into Thursday night. They're playing right now. Salt Lake is, so I'm not too sure if what he's done. But one thing we do know for sure that has happened tonight with Salt Lake is Brandon Marsh has been activated and started his first game, and then his second at bat of the season for him, this happens.
Defensive gems before long. Here's the pitch that's driven into left center field. Long run for Trammell, still going back, and that ball is gone just over the barrier in left center field. Brandon Marsh with his first AAA home run. The Bees regain the lead at 3-2.
So Brandon Marsh, first home run of the season and his second at bat of the season. So again, if him and Joe are clicking, you know, I still think Joe probably gets called up first before Brandon. But, you know, if he hits the ground running, wouldn't be surprised to see him maybe in September or you know, yeah. definitely, I think at the beginning of next year, if he has a good spring training. So it's great to see him back out there, highly motivated this year for personal reasons. And I think he'll have a great, great year. And with him and Joe there, you already know their relationship. So that's going to be a lot of fun to watch as the season progresses. Again, those are the minor league kind of updates right now. And we'll kind of sprinkle them in as the season goes, because, you know, Chris and I both really enjoy going down to Inland Empire and checking out some of the younger guys. And it's just fun to see guys develop. And then now, you see Chris Rodriguez, you see Jared Walsh, you see these guys that are, you know, contributing to the Angels that you're like, oh yeah, I remember him at Inland Empire.
Or yeah, Taylor Ward, Matt Dice.
Yeah.
It just goes on and on.
So that's sure. That's always a lot of fun. So definitely, if you are in the Inland Empire area, I know OC guys, it might be a little bit of a harder drive, but if you're in Inland Empire, San Bernardino, Riverside, Rancho, you know, Upland, whatever, definitely go check out the Inland Empire 66ers. It's a lot of fun, and their season is going pretty strong now. First home stand is done, and their second home stand is coming up right around the corner. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the All Angels podcast. We'll be back again Sunday, hopefully with some good news with the Boston series. But Boston is definitely a tough team. So again, we'll be back Sunday. Follow us on Instagram, Halo_Haven. Same thing with Twitter, Halo_Haven, to know exactly when the next podcast will be recording. And if you have a question at any point, go ahead and email us at allangelspodcast@gmail.com. So I am Dan Garcia, joined with
the curator,
and we'll see you next time. Go Halos.
We are driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.